When I agreed to come here and talk today about a spiritual response to mental illness, I spoke with Christina Selset. Am I pronouncing that correctly? I don't know this for sure, but I have a pretty good idea. If you want something accomplished, she's the person to go to. Just saying. But she did leave out one little detail. She didn't tell me that you have already in place a program of outreach for those touched by mental and emotional challenges. I didn't learn this till I was already on the schedule. And I know that it's tantamount to a grievous sin to try to get off the schedule. So here I am. I also spoke with Barbara Cornell about your program. What a treasure you have in her also. So this is all to say, I hope that today's consideration of this topic won't be too redundant. But just in case, I have both their cell phone numbers here. And if you want, we can all call them at once and say, you've heard all this before, and we'll just go out to lunch. Well, I don't see any cell phones out, so I will proceed. I thought perhaps it would be okay to speak on this topic because once in a great while, the gods and goddesses, sprites and spirits collude with a synchronicity that I take as a sign. Last week was one of those times. Our local newspaper featured a headline that said, "Off Center, a Fine Place to Be." And quite often, being off center myself, I thought, well, all right, I personally have been validated by the newspaper, the Kitsap Sun. And then another interesting thing happened. Richard, my husband, and I happened to see a play by a local theater group entitled Next to Normal. So I had my headline declaring that being a bit off center was a fine place to be, although I have to tell you, the article itself was actually about photography. But I take my messages where I can get them. And I had my play, Next to Normal, which dramatizes the life of a woman dealing with the difficulties of her bipolar condition and the terrible toll it takes on her family. And so I felt armed with the blessings of the aforementioned gods and goddesses, sprites and spirits. I actually gave this talk at Cedars last year because some members had requested it. And when I agreed to tackle the subject, I thought, sure, I know a bit about emotional and mental challenges. I can do that. You see, I myself cope with low-level depression, which I handle with mild medication. But perhaps more significantly, I grew up with a severely handicapped aunt who lived with my parents from the time they married until just before my mother died. Additionally, my mother was a deeply depressed woman, perhaps to some degree related to the heavy responsibility she felt for her sister. So that's the thing or two that I knew about mental and emotional challenges. But I had never used the words mental health and spirituality in the same sentence. I would like her to define the term spiritual response as caring for one another in a way that is supportive and appropriate and that addresses each other's needs. So if we look at the broad perspective from this definition, we can see that our country faces some serious problems. With mental health issues on a sharp incline, the number of available hospital beds is on the decline, forcing many people into emergency rooms, shelters, on the streets, or in prisons. Their family members and loved ones are often left to struggle alone. Young men and women suffering from PTSD receive totally inadequate governmental support. Guns are readily available to anyone, including the mentally challenged, which, by the way, is as much a gun control issue as it is a mental health problem. On a more positive note, we could talk about the great Unitarian reformer Dorothea Dix, who in the mid-1800s was the foremost crusader for people with mental challenges. and you youth have been prominent in the history and caring about and treating mental health, mental disorders. We can be proud of that, but we cannot rest in the past. So, feeling a bit overwhelmed considering such a complex subject from the perspective of spirituality, I took a different tack. I thought about my fairly recent stay in the hospital. I was nervous as I anticipated surgery and what the aftermath might be. A large number of our congregation had promised to keep me in their thoughts, meditations, and prayers. And I want to tell you the power and energy that a group of people can generate when we put our minds and hearts to it is tremendous. That energy was palpable to me as I went into surgery and during my recovery. And thinking back about that experience led me to an idea of how we might respond spiritually to mental challenges. Surgery and other physical ailments do not carry the stigma that mental illness does, a stigma that can make a person fearful of getting help or reaching out to family, friends, or neighbors. So I think we can begin by actively destigmatizing mental challenges. We often hear statements such as, she is anorexia, or he is bipolar, or she is anorexic, or he is bipolar. But we never hear that she is breast cancer, or he is a stroke. To remove these perceived defects, it is important that we get to know and accept each other as fellow human beings, not as a diagnosis. If I share with you the fact that I've had mental challenges myself and in my family, you might feel safe to tell me that you do too. This requires us to reach out and talk to each other without judgment. We all carry burdens that would be made lighter by true sharing. If we in our churches can really know each other, not just where we came from, or what we do or did for a living, or whether we're liberal enough, or who brings the best casseroles to a potluck dinner, I mean really know and accept each other, then we can care for each other. Recently, Cedars sponsored our first Death Cafe. The range of feelings about death and the question of an afterlife was, of course, as wide as is any UU gathering. But everyone's beliefs were honored, and even those that were diametrically different from one's own. That acceptance was a spiritual response. We can respond in that same non-judgmental way to those who are touched by mental challenges. But in order to accept one another, I believe we must learn to hear each other. Diana, the main character in Next to Normal, the play I mentioned earlier, says at one point, all my fears just sit inside me, waiting to be heard. Please hear my calling. Excuse me. But don't you think all of us sometimes have similar feelings? We're not really that different from each other. We're all a little off-center and next to normal. In the pain management program at Swedish Hospital, one of the doctors emphasizes the need that we all have to be heard, and he talks about different ways of listening. Sympathetic listening, neutral listening, and compassionate listening, and when the use of each one is appropriate. And listening is a skill that can be learned like any other skill. In our UU churches, we could sponsor listening workshops where we learn these skills. Because everyone wants and needs to be heard. Not only those with mental and emotional problems and their loved ones, but also our own spouses, children, relatives, and friends, and even our enemies want and need to be heard. Marcia Kristen teaches the power of empathy workshops, and this is what she has written about her daughter. It is a struggle not to jump to conclusions or want to rush in and rescue when we communicate with someone who is hurting. However, she says, my biggest teacher has been my oldest daughter, who has taught me so much about the beauty of presence and deep listening. From her and her struggles with anxiety, depression, and panic attacks, I have learned that the best gift I can give is not a solution, nor to talk her out of her feelings or give her reassurance, all of which are my first parental default. But the biggest gift I can give is to offer my presence so that she has a safe place to express and be heard. I have learned that listening with compassion is a spiritual practice. Marcia goes on to say, my daughter is not broken. She does not want to be fixed. She wants understanding and resonance. I can help create a container for her to find her own inner wisdom. That's what everyone wants, to be understood and know that they matter. And here, an unknown author says, when I ask you to listen to me and you start giving me advice, you have not done what I asked. When I ask you to listen to me and you feel you have to do something to solve my problem, you have failed me. But when you accept as a simple fact that I do feel what I feel, no matter how irrational, then I can quit trying to convince you and get about the business of understanding what's behind my feelings. John Palema was a 16-year-old fledgling musician when he said in an interview, true attentive listening is a vanishing skill and an underdeveloped talent. It is the capacity to hear sympathetically that makes us truly human. The words we share define who we are in our connections with or disconnections from other human beings. Without true listening, we lose contact with others and with ourselves. It gives one hope for the future when a 16-year-old can show such wisdom. Our UU churches could become identified as caring congregations, similar to the way we're designated as welcoming congregations. I don't know that this is available on the national level, but perhaps it should be, and we could take that as a radical cause right here in our communities. But in order to create a sustainable mental health structure in the world, we also need to become politicized. Sorry. Only when the government participates in the care of all its citizens will there be more hospital beds, shelters, and care for the homeless, and fully funded community support for mental health. Only then will Medicare and Medicaid be available for psychiatric care. This lies at the very soul of our nation. If I may paraphrase something Jesus said, what we do unto the most needy of these, we do unto ourselves. To that end, you will find postcards addressed to your state representatives and senator on the table in the back. Please take them and write to your congresspeople about the need for governmental support for mental health. As I prepared for this talk, I thought a lot about my mentally challenged aunt. I remember how sometimes I resented her constant presence. She inserted herself into every aspect of my life. Privacy was not in her vocabulary. She could be difficult sometimes. Not that I ever was, mind you. But thinking back, I did realize that no matter how much she sometimes bothered me, it just wasn't in my nature to be unkind to her. She was in my life from the time I was born, so I didn't see her as bad or crazy. She was just different. and living with her freed me from the fear of people with mental and emotional challenges. And one day when I was visiting my parents in my parents' home, my aunt walked past the chair where I sat, and she stopped and she put her hand on my head. She looked me in the eyes for just a few moments, gave my head a little pat, and walked on. I don't know what she was thinking, but in that moment, this person who was so cut off from normal human interaction touched me deeply, and I felt that something unspoken and perhaps unspeakable passed between us. Looking back at this intimate encounter, I realized that I could put my mentally challenged aunt and the words, a spiritual response, in the same sentence.